Station number 16788, Roy Northover, Reel 1.
Where were you born, please?
In the parish of White Regis in the borough of Weymouth.
Which year was this?
1918.
What did your father do for a living?
He did 22 years in the Royal Navy.
Did you go to school in Weymouth?
White Regis.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
Did you get a job?
Immediately. I was my family apprenticed me as a carpenter and joiner to F. Selby, builder, White Regis.
How did you come to be in the Navy then?
Ah. Well, that was a rather awkward question, because through acquaintances at work, I joined the Territorials, the 179 Battery Royal Garrison Artillery. Then, during the course of my year of improver, which brought me up to, nearly 18, I had a few words with the foreman, who wasn't very pleased, and I had the sack, and I immediately went and joined the Navy in 1936.
Where were you trained in the Navy?
Well, it was called Victory 2, Royal Naval Barracks, Portsmouth. The name now, of course, is HMS Nelson.
What did you think of the training that you got?
At the time, we were going to murder our instructor. At the end, we gave him a silver cigarette case. Does that cover what I thought of my training?
Did he treat you roughly?
Well, no, he treated me as I know now, having gone through the experiences of being in charge of men and boys. He treated us correctly. He had to teach us to act as a team, to work together, and if necessary, which it did happen, fight together.
But you appreciated him at the end of it, did you?
Oh, yeah, because he did get it into us that we were a team. And I think that training in those early years was what helped me to save life, and my own, of course, when the ship was sunk.
Which ship did you first go to sea in?
HMS Malaya. HMS Malaya, 1936, to the Mediterranean.
What did you think of service in that ship?
Well, I was only a young stoker then, learning my job. I was very happy. I wasn't married, obviously. I was single. We didn't have much money. But I was interested in the mechanical side of the Navy. And I was quite happy.
What kind of duties did the Malaya have when you were in the ship?
Well, when I started off, on what was known as boiling cleaner party, and our job was to, with an ERA and a stoker PO in charge, we cleaned the tubes of the Babcock's boilers. That's the water tubes. They had to be cleaned periodically to get rid of rust, scale, and that kind of thing. When we weren't doing that, when we were at sea, I used to watch keep, and then I used to watch keep in the boiler rooms.
Was it a happy ship?
Oh, I think so. Definitely on the stoker's mess deck, we had a very happy ship. Again, you must appreciate, this is before the war. This isn't the modern Navy. We had very little money. Food was sparse but palatable, and we were thrown very much on ourselves. I even learnt some of the very old sailors' games. I wouldn't be able to play them now, but such as the sailor's kit bag and all various funny names. You just sit around like a lot of children and play these games. But it passed away the time.
How did you play sailor's kit bag?
Oh, I don't know. I think you had the by, it was forfeits, I can't remember now. We used to sit round with all this gear and play a game.
Were they gambling games?
Oh, no. No, that was strictly, anyone caught gambling was over the wall in the glasshouse. Lots of things in those days were punished, even by death in those days.
Did you know of anybody who was punished?
No. Well, you wouldn't do anyway, because they would just disappear for a court-martial and you wouldn't see them again. But as far as I know, I was never on a ship where it happened. I was on a ship where several people were sent to the glasshouse for various offences.
Which ship was that?
Oh, there was one, I suppose. Eagle. But I can't really remember because it didn't concern me, you know what I mean? You didn't take a lot of notice, you just said, oh, where's Harry gone? And someone sat for a holiday for 6 months and you just forgot it.
You've put here about a collision in the Bay of Biscay.
Oh, yes, that was on our way out. We went through a gale. Then, as mostly, very often in the Bay of Biscay, when the wind subsided, up came a thick fog. And out of this fog, where was I then? I was down below, that's right. I was down below where I sling my hammock. But I couldn't have been in my hammock because it was daytime. But anyway, I saw these two 6-inch guns make a lot of noise and swing around. But cutting it short, this cargo vessel, 8,000 ton I think it was, bumped into us and gashed our side. I've got a photograph somewhere, and put a gash in our side. We had to turn around and come back again to where we left to go into dock.
Whose fault did it seem to be?
Well, as ratings, we would never know that anyway, because in those days, officers didn't speak to ratings or tell them what was going on. You had to guess. The Americans got a name for it. They call it scuttlebutt.
What
you know,
does
that's
mean?
Gossip. There was an interesting thing there, though. When we got back to Plymouth to go into dock, a certain amount of the ship's company was taken off of the Malaya. You must remember this was now 1930, beginning of 37, I think. But anyway, we were taken off and we went onto another battleship, which was unmanned at the time, HMS Revenge, and we went to the Coronation Review up at Southend. And then, of course, when that was over, we came back and joined our ship again.
What was the review like?
Well, like most naval reviews, we were all lined up in various battleships, cruisers, destroyers, and the new king went round in the royal yacht, and everyone stood to attention. Well, we weren't very interested in politics, we weren't supposed to be interested in politics, and I wasn't. And after the abdication of the uncrowned king, which I still served under mine. I mean, I still always empathise I served under him. But we weren't particularly worried about outside affairs. We lived on our own and did what we were told.
You put down here that another ship you went to see in pre-war was HMS Sardonyx. Sardonyx.
That's a destroyer. Well, that was when I came home from the Malaya. And I was drafted to the Sardonyx, a small destroyer. I got a photograph of it. And we didn't know what we were doing, but we used to go to sea every day, come in weekends, and we used to go out into the channel, go around in circles, up and down, and again, we were never told anything, not ratings. It wasn't until 1946 that I found out that we were the target ship being used to develop the DF, the deep direction finding gear that proved so valuable to the Navy in 43 to get the U-boats to pick up their wireless messages and home in on them. We weren't told that. We used to just go to sea, roll around, come back in, and that was it.
What were you doing when war was declared?
Oh, well, we were at Singapore, and we'd just come down from Hong Kong. We went into dock, and we were going on the summer cruise, including Bali, the land of grass skirts, and in those days that was literally true in 1939, but unfortunately when we left Singapore in a hurry, we turned right instead of left, and it was then piped that we are now at a state of war, and that's it, we were at war.
How did you feel when you heard that we were at war?
Well, everybody knew it was going to happen, didn't they? We all knew there was going to be a war. Nobody in their right mind would think any otherwise the way Hitler and his regime was acting. It just had to come. I think we were more worried about that we, as always with politicians, the service had been cut down so much that we knew we were on a sticky wicket. We were short-handed and that's it.
Did you feel dismayed about the war?
Well, no, it had to be done. I mean, don't forget, we, as young men, had read all about what was happening to the Jews, the Gypsies, the Slavs, the invalided, conquest of countries. That had been going on. You remember, I was on the Sardonyx when the crisis came, and we went out to sea with reservists on board who had never seen an oil-fired ship before. Neither gun worked properly, we only had two, and neither gun worked properly, but we went to sea and went out into the channel on patrol. It was our job. There's nothing heroic or, you know, or brave or anything about it. It's not boasting, it was just your job. We're back to that training again.
Did you feel at that time that Britain was going to win the war?
Well, that's very difficult to answer now, because we were still enthusiastic young people who was going to do what we were being paid to fight the enemy. I think we all became a little despondent after Dunkirk, because we realized then that the enemy had the means to bring us to our feet if it was used properly or we made too many mistakes. But fortunately they made mistakes, and we managed to, such as when we were in the Mediterranean, and that was, as you saw by that bit of paper, 47 submarines alone was lost there in 2 years. But no, I don't think I was ever despondent that we were going to lose the war. I suppose I'd been brought up by a Methodist father, and right is right, and right will prevail.
Once war was declared, what happened to you then?
Oh, well, then we, as I say, we steamed out of Singapore, went round to Trincomalee, and then for the next 3 months, our aircraft, we covered the whole of the Indian Ocean looking for enemy supply ships or submarines. And apart from one aviator shooting a whale, thinking it was a submarine, and another time we were in the hangar watching a cinema and the film was Gunga Din. And it got to the part where Gunga Din climbed to the tower and he was blowing the bugle, alarm to arms. Everyone was shouting and cheering. What we didn't know, they just sounded off alarm to arms on the actual ship's tannoy. Fortunately, it was neutral, steaming without lights. But that was just mostly routine, boredom, sometimes bad food, sometimes poor water. And of course, Trincomalee in those days was nobody's idea of a holiday home. Then, after that, in January, we went back to Singapore to have another dock clean and refit. And unfortunately, the gunner's party dropped a £250 bomb down the chute to the magazine, which no one will ever know why, because it exploded, killing 15 men, injuring a lot more, causing quite a bit of damage. We had to shore up a bulkhead. And of course, there you are, we went into dock and we had to have those things put right. Following that, we came out, and early in the year of 1940, we escorted the Empire troops, or the Aznacs and Australians, the convoys, two lots of convoys. Oh no, in between that we went, in 1939, I've gone ahead of myself, we went down after the Graaf Spee. We went down to South Africa after the Graaf Spee. What we didn't know, because again no one told us, which I suppose was security, but we suddenly halted before we went round the Cape. I assume that the powers had told our captain we were no longer required because the cruisers had turned her towards South America. We were very pleased about that because with 11-inch guns and about 30 knots and our old 6-inch guns, we wouldn't have done so well. So that was from there we came back up and wended our way, and then we went to Singapore for our docking. Now, I had interrupted this, hadn't I?
Don't worry about that. What was life aboard this ship like?
The Eagle? Well, I've got to be fair. Up to 1941, when we came home, as I said, in the South Atlantic, we had our aircraft burnt up. We had to come home. Up to then, we were still a peacetime ship's company. And this harks back again to that 4 months training and the bloke that trained us. And we were a very, very happy ship. We used to play deck hockey, as I showed you the picture, tombola, cinema when we could get them. Walk up and down the flight deck, I think I did that a million miles on that. We couldn't do very much. There wasn't very much to do. It wasn't until we were stationed at Alexandria that we were able to go ashore and have a pint of beer and stretch our legs. We still had to be aboard by half past 10 or 11, depending on your rank. But on the whole, she was the happiest ship I was ever on. We had a very good captain, Captain Bridges, and we always felt secure with him. And everybody, it's in films even, the statement, the lucky Eagle. You see, I've even got it on tape somewhere where they say the lucky Eagle's been sunk. She was a good ship. But there's nothing you can actually state was bad. It wasn't bad, but it was a changed atmosphere. You had all these, a lot of them was upset with having to be in the Navy and go to war. They'd been roped away from their home. They were getting less money than us, which I always thought was unfair. So we didn't settle down, and we were too busy. We were running Spitfires to Malta, and in between that we were trying to run convoys, most of which were disastrous, including the final one, of course. Although, as you sure, I'm sure you must know, the Operation Pedestal had 14 ships, 5 got in, which was enough to hold out for another month to enable Monty to give them what for.
Before we come on to Operation Pedestal and the loss of the ship, can you tell me about the events that happened between January 1940, when you were at Singapore, and 1942, please?
Oh, well, now, 1940. Well, we had the bomb go off, we had to be repaired. We came out, we escorted two convoys of the Australian New Zealand troops to the Mediterranean, so we knew something was going to happen there. And then suddenly, I can't quite remember what happened, but suddenly we left Trincomalee and found ourselves in the Mediterranean in May 1940, just 1 month before the balloon went up with the Italians. And from then on, we were too busy to really know very much. We were out most of the time. We'd come in, and as I just said, at least one squadron of our Swordfish would go up the desert. I believe a flight of three went down to the Red Sea and sank two ITAID destroyers, set another one on fire. I don't know what happened. I think they gave themselves up. You know, odd things like that. As I said before, they sank a submarine and a submarine supply depot ship up at Tobruk. Several ships at sea. They carried out bombardments of Italian installations in North Africa. We're pretty busy. I mean, you must remember, all we were, really, the likes of me, just housekeepers, keeping the ship going. We weren't doing any actual fighting. It was our aircraft, and of course, when we were being attacked, such as that photograph there, and they were bombing us, the gunners. And then, of course, that's 40. And of course, in 41, it became apparently clear to Admiralty that the Italian frogmen put the Valiant and the Warspite.
Queen Elizabeth, was it?
Queen Elizabeth. Valiant and Queen Elizabeth, the frogmen put them on the ship's bed, so they were useless. The Barham, of course, was sunk. There was a repair ship was also sunk trying to get out. And it was decided that they would remove all big ships and only have a token submarine and cruiser force. And that's when we left. And that was very interesting. I don't suppose it's interesting to anybody else, but when we got to the Suez Canal, I've never seen so many sunken ships in all my life. Jerry made a very, very good job there. There were sunken ships the whole way of that upper part of the Suez Canal. And as we were going along, we suddenly stopped engines, and right in front of us, there were the sunken freighter with what seemed to be no space for us to go by. There was a whistle, a lot of Arabic, and a thousand, that's what it seemed like to us, at least a thousand, oh, I nearly said a naughty word, Arabs came on both banks, lines were passed across, and they pulled us through that gap. They couldn't start the engines for danger of perhaps ammunition in the ship or making the banks collapse, and they literally just pulled us through that. Well, from there we went round the South Atlantic to Freetown, and that was our base. Our job then, again, was similar to the Indian Ocean. We were doing a triangular patrol. We would go up to the Azores, across to South America, although we never saw it, down to Santa Elena, and then back up to Freetown again. And our aircraft, of course, was doing the searching. And although I'm not sure this is only, again, gossip, scuttlebutt, or whatever you like to call it, I do know we sank one. And I do know we captured one. And the third, as far as I know, they set on fire. I don't know what happened to that. So we did. They were brand new submarine supply ships, fully loaded, that the Japanese, who were then, of course, neutral, had built for the Germans, and they were coming round the Cape Horn to come up to join. So we did a bit of good. Unfortunately, our escorting cruiser was sunk, had a great loss of life. That's right, we had a signal, and they did make that public. There was a signal that we were running into a pack of U-boats, and the cruiser went through the Azores to the West Indies, and she got sunk. And we came back the other way and went straight down to Freetown again. And it was then, of course, that when one of the aircraft was being taken on board, that an unlucky air rigger took a smoke bomb off the wing without putting the pin in first and took it down and it dropped. And of course he died and couldn't tell us anything about it, and our aircraft was on fire. And if it hadn't been through the quick thinking of a petty officer, I suppose he was a Fleet Air Arm man, because he pressed the tit and the hangar was immediately flooded with salt water, which is the reason why our aircraft was no good to us and we had to... I do know, this is fact as well, that the Captain Bridges asked Admiralty if we could go to Cape Town to get new aircraft. But the next thing we knew, we were coming home to England where we were to get our new aircraft. At that time, I got married, my special license, and we were on a honeymoon.
Which month is this, by the way?
This, we got home in November...
41.
Yeah, November 41. We got married on the 9th, so it would have been... We must have got home the end of October or the beginning of November. And we were on our honeymoon when we heard that the Ark Royal had been sunk. And as I say, and as my wife was horrified to hear, that, as I said, well, we shall now be going straight out to the Med. When I got back to the ship, it was true. They put on Oerlikons in place of the four-barreled machine guns we had as anti-aircraft close range. And they were doing everything they could to get everything put back into one piece. And I suppose it must have been February we sailed for the Med again.
What was morale aboard the ship like by now?
Well, we hadn't... a little bit despondent, because don't forget, as I said, we'd had... And don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking these men. I always felt they had a green rub, these HOs that were called up and getting less money than us. But you don't settle into a ship's company unless you all join together. It's a different feeling of atmosphere. I mean, like when we joined the Eagle, we went over one gangway up at Hong Kong. We went up one gangway and into the Eagle. And the old ship's company went out another gangway and into the Trooper. There had been some officers and key ratings already on board, but you went as a team, 1,000 strong or 20 strong, but you went as a team. Now here we had we just heard all the bad news, and everybody thought it was the end of the war, according to the papers. And we had all these new people, so...